Last night, the Rockets fell apart in the fourth quarter, fell to the Jazz 107-91. Game 5 is tomorrow night. How big of a missed opportunity was it not to win and get the extra 2 days of rest?
Okay, what units am I measuring how big of an opportunity? Is this like hectares, miles, percentages? How big of a missed opportunity was it?
Dealer's choice.
It was 7 hectares. Let's see, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 4. Only because I worry about Chris Paul. I believe he has a finite number of playoff appearances left in him, both in a season and a career. So it's one extra appearance for Chris Paul staying healthy. And also Clint Capella, who to me it looks like he's still being bothered by whatever that respiratory illness was. And I think an extra night off could have helped him maybe be a little bit fresher for the Warriors.
All right, you go with the four, yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to go with a 6. This is the one advantage that you could have had going into a series with the Golden State Warriors. The one. This was it. You don't have home court, and you're going up against a Golden State team that has more guns than you do.
You got health, knock on wood.
For now.
For now.
Right. But, I mean, what happens in tomorrow night's game? What happens if Chris Paul's hamstring all of a sudden disintegrates?
Do not say that.
Why not?
Do not say such things.
We're going to act like it's not a possibility?
I'm going to go with a 7. It's a possibility, of course. I'm going to go with a 7. I do think it's a deal, and Paul's been hitting on this all morning long. You really want the perfect storm to beat a team like the Golden State Warriors, especially in a situation in which they will have home courts and they will have Game 7 at Oracle Arena. You want every advantage you can get. And thankfully, the Warriors also play tomorrow night, as the Rockets do as well. So you'd be, if both teams win, which I think they will, on equal schedules, but I think the Rockets did miss a significant opportunity by blowing the sweep last night. Right now, we're 2 days away from the first round of the NFL draft. We have you covered all day long, starting at 6 a.m. on Thursday on Sports Radio 610. Brian Gain, is he more likely to trade up or trade down in the first round?
Trade down, that's not even a question. That's an established party line.
I disagree.
He runs on a platform of trading down. What are you saying? That because he talks about trading down so much, that he must actually want to trade up? It's more likely that he trades down.
I think it's more likely. We're never going to know because of the way the question, you know, is asked and what's going to happen on Thursday. Like, he might trade up, but he might have also been wanting to trade down. You never know. But I believe he is more likely to trade up because I think there's at least one, if not two, offensive tackles. So where if they get within range, which is like 15, 16, 17, 18, I firmly believe that Gain is willing to pull the trigger to protect the blind side of Deshaun Watson.
Mike, Brian Gain didn't have a first or a second round pick last year. Right now, he has 3 combined first and second round picks. If you hadn't had sex for 365 calendar days, would you opt for one really good sexual experience or 3 pretty good ones? I'm going to say 3 pretty good ones. As long as you're still under the age of 40, especially
things?
The one time thing, no matter how, like, you're gonna go for multiple numbers.
I would go with 3.
Yeah.
Is it one continuous, like, all night affair, or is it
no? We're talking like how, like, somebody might charge for it. Yeah. Like, it's yeah.
I'll take the 3.
Yeah. Of course you're taking.
I'll
the
take
three.
The 3, but
you're not happy after just the one. No matter how great the one is, you're kind of like, 5 minutes later, you're like, oh, more would be nice. And that's what Brian Gain is right now. It's like he's been in the Army for a year, and all of a sudden he's on leave. It's time to party, and that means as many draft picks as possible. Got 3 right now in the first 2 rounds. 4 would be better.
The closer that we get to Thursday, the more I become convinced that they really like Andre Dillard. It just, the left tackle from Washington State,
right.
And I just think it makes a lot of sense. Now, I don't know if they'll be able to get him. Maybe the Lions will take him at number 8, or the Bills will take him, or maybe Jacksonville takes him at number 7, and it's impossible. But if that guy falls down the board, I think Gain is very likely to be aggressive in trying to get him.
I think Dillard, when I try to think about the psychology of scouts in the NFL, I think most people have Juwan Taylor ranked above Andre Dillard, but yes. I feel like Andre Dillard has the athleticism and size to be that upper echelon tackle, and he has enough of the other traits in terms of being a more complete athlete that I just, like in the way he moves, that I feel like people would choose him before Juwan Taylor. I don't think that it's going to be a choice because I think Dillard's going to be gone.
Okay.
But first, I think Dillard's going to be gone way earlier than the Texans would be able to trade up for him.
The big questions on a Tuesday. It's been a couple of straight days. Lousy start from Garrett Cole. Lousy start from Kyle McHugh. spotty beginning for Brad Peacock before he got it together last night. Should we be worried about the Astros starting pitching right now in late April?
You know, yeah, just a little bit. But it's fair to be worried about them at all points in time. Is Verlander going to be what he was last season? It's going to be really hard to do. That was his career best year. Is Gerrit Cole going to be what he was last year when now it's his second year in the American League and he's already seen some struggles early on? Colin McHugh was a reliever last season and his sliders had been great to open up the year, but then all of a sudden the Texas Bleeping Rangers figured it out this weekend. And then you're talking about Brad Peacock, who I don't think is going to be in the starting rotation for the entirety of the year, and Wade Miley, who is there. I mean, it's just not as good as it was last season, and because that was one of the main reasons they had such a good season last year, yeah, it's totally fair to be a little bit concerned about the starting rotation.
I think it's fair to be concerned about it, but not to the degree that it changes my expectations of the team as a whole, because like you can't have awesome everything. You can't have awesome starting pitching and awesome bullpen
and an awesome lineup.
Like, and right now, two of those three things are awesome. The starting pitching as a whole has been pretty damn good, too. So a few blemishes, three games in a row, doesn't freak me out that much because Gerrit Cole is going to have his bad games. He struggles with control in that game. He's going to get that back. Peacock and McHugh are question marks just because they're returning to that full-time role. So you're not going to feel super comfortable with them
in the first month of the year, too.
Yeah.
What happens
yeah.
in May and June, July as
yeah.
the year progresses?
Josh James, I guess Josh James was always a huge question mark for me anyway. Like, he still has...
He might need a stint in the minors.
He needs maturing. Like, he needs...
He just needs to keep pitching and get it together
right,
at some point.
Right, right.
And, you know, I still think he can be in the major leagues and... He can still be on this team, but he just can't pitch high leverage innings. That's the big thing. I'm a little bit concerned with the starting pitching in that, all right, if I'm comparing it to last year, if Keuchel had a bad start, if Lance McCullers had a bad start, if Morton had a bad start, I would just dismiss it, basically. I just move on, like, these guys will be fine. But when it's Colin McHugh and he's back in the rotation, and we're not sure what it's going to look like the whole season, with Brad Peacock, Wade Miley, who's a new guy who's more of an unknown, I don't quite have the same reaction with bad starts from this rotation as I did last year. Last year, I was like, oh, they'll get them next time. This year, I'm not quite as sure. Jeff Van Gundy on Sunday said this about his beloved Houston Texans. He wants two cornerbacks, two offensive linemen, Super Bowl. Are the Texans two corners and two offensive linemen away from the Super Bowl?
Yeah, arguably, sure. But the problem is, that can you find those guys in the draft in one off season? That's hard to find.
That's a lot to ask.
That's right, because they asked specifically what is he looking for in the draft, right? And he said two offensive linemen, two corners, Super Bowl. I don't think you're going to find those guys. It would take a little bit of luck.
When he says it that way, though, I think he means he wants them to draft two guys at each position. And I bet he realizes Jeff Van Gundy follows sports. I bet he realizes that the odds of them getting two impact guys are pretty much zero at both of those positions. I would say they are a offensive lineman and a cornerback away from being a legitimate yeah. title contender. Just two. They are two impact players away. And that's why these first four picks are going to be so damn important.
To be clear, like, he was having total fun with the answer. That wasn't
serious.
What,
true.
I,
but
right.
Come on, at some point.
It was Jeff Van Gundy at his goofiest. It was really good. It was really, really good.
There's a little bit of something to it.
Yeah.
I think there's something to
it. No, I mean, it was an informed opinion, but like it wasn't like he sat down and wrote down the, like, this is what the Texans need to get in the draft. They need to get two starting offensive linemen, and they need to do two starting cornerbacks, and then they'll go to the Super Bowl.
Didn't Mark Jackson say, oh, you're crazy, with his weird accent that I can't figure out?
Basically, yes. Basically.
Hand down, man down.
That's, by the way,
God,
Jeff,
he's awful. He
Jeff Van Gundy being a complete Houston homer and the fact that it has escaped anybody else's attention outside the city is one of my favorite things in sports.
Yeah, people haven't really picked up on that.
No, nobody's ever picked up on it. He's a complete Houston homer. I think he does a good enough job of it, you know, and he's appropriately critical. It's not like he's such a homer that when he's doing Rockets games, he's like, you know, acting like every call against the Rockets is an atrocity or anything. I think, but he has enough hints about like how much he likes Houston and Houston teams, not just the Texans, but like the Rockets as themselves. But he doesn't get any criticism for it. Good job, Jeff Van Gundy.
I'm actually fine with the
he
idea.
He used to listen to the midday show. I don't know if he listens to the morning show.
I'm actually fine with the idea of being two corners and two offensive linemen away from the Super Bowl. The problem is, I just think that's so hard to get. It's like being Kevin Durant away from winning the NBA championship. It's not easy to actually get him. I'm going to do one more real quick and squeeze this in. There are rumbling some reports that former U of H star Ed Oliver could go as high as number 3 overall to the New York Jets. Real simple. Is Ed Oliver worth a top 3 pick? Because I think that's a little too rich.
He completely 100% totally is worth a top 3 pick. He wasn't used appropriately in college. I think there's more production in him. Part of it was the scheme. Part of it was his actual technique. Like, he needs to use his hands better. He needs to use his hands like Aaron Donald does. But he has freakish athletic ability. That's what the top few picks in the draft are for. Just go ahead and take a flyer on a guy that is just an extreme freak in terms of the way he moves and can be used. And I think Greg Williams with the Jets would do a lot of fun with him. Yeah, he's completely worth a top 5 pick. Having said that, he might not go until the 15 or 16.
That's the weird part to me.
I don't know. It feels like he's going to be gone by 10 with all the rumors that we're hearing recently. Like, the Raiders are in on him. The Jets are in on him.
He's not that small either. I keep getting described as like as extremely undersized or something. And I keep seeing guys that are him being compared to guys who are way smaller. Where he honestly, the defensive tackle from I'm blanking on his name from the 49ers who played from Notre Dame, Brian.
I know what you're talking about. Brian Young.
Brian, he might be more of like a Brian Young size guy, but a little bit more muscular.
He's not a
small guy.
I think number 3 is a little bit too rich for Ed Oliver, but trust me, come Friday, if the Jets pick Ed Oliver, number 3 overall, then he better be an all-pro.